How does it feel to be able to perform in front of New York crowds on a regular basis?
I think it's awesome, you know. I mean, especially, like, you know, New York is one of the top markets for professional wrestling. I grew up a huge ECW fan, and ECW ran a lot in New York. You know, Queens Elks Lodge is one that they would run a lot, so it actually feels good to be able to have run in the big building in that vicinity. So, you know, it's always great. New York fans are probably the toughest fans to wrestle in front of. They're probably the most critical. So, you know, to be able to wrestle regularly and have a lot of success in front of them, you know, it's always a pleasure.
You mentioned you went to a lot of ECW shows. What's the craziest thing you ever saw at an ECW show?
The craziest thing I ever saw. It's tough to pick something out. When I went, like, I used to go to the shows at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I just remember, there was like a huge tag tournament. I just remember every match was insane. I was kind of young when those shows were, so can't remember anything like.
Did you have a favorite superstar in ECW growing up?
Yeah, I was always a huge Rob Van Dam fan. I was a huge Mikey Whipwreck fan. A lot of the guys like that, but mostly Rob Van Dam. He was probably like one of my top guys.
Okay. So we were talking about your independent wrestling. What would you say has been your biggest accomplishment as an independent wrestler? Because right now you're the FIBO wrestling champion, I believe, right?
Yep.
World champion. Would that be the top accomplishment, or is it something else?
No, I would say, to be honest, my biggest accomplishment was to be able to tour Japan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was always a dream of mine. You know, I worked real hard for years trying to get, you know, some way into Japan. And eventually, you know, actually just last year, it finally broke through for me, and I was able to go over for Dragon Gate and do a month-long tour for them and everything, and you know, I had a huge title match, actually, at one of their pay-per-views, so it was a huge success. It was a lot of fun, and like I said, it was always a dream of mine, so I loved it.
Who'd you wrestle on the tour? Any big names on the tour?
I mean, guys that were big in Japan,
okay,
or the Dragon Gate company, so I'm not sure if they're too familiar, you know, a lot of the names, I don't know if they're too familiar in the States,
okay.
But like the guy I wrestled at the pay-per-view was Genki Horiguchi.
Okay.
And he was, he's been a huge star for Dragon Gate, and he was their, it's called the Brave Gate Championship, and I actually took him on for that.
Very nice. So that's just the independent wrestling part of your life. You actually made your debut with Total Nonstop Action, TNA, in 2011. And my first question is, what did it feel like being a part of the X Division?
Initially, because I have kind of, I guess, a bad taste with that company.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
So, but initially, to get the call that they wanted to sign me, and actually, you know, the first few months being there was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it was a great honor, because when I broke into wrestling was when the X Division was at its hottest. It's pretty much when TNA kind of broke out.
Yeah.
And that was what I was watching. That's the guys I was saying I want to be like. I want to, you know, be able to wrestle with. I wanted to tour with, all that stuff. So to finally, you know, to finally that company that I was watching to call me and say they want me to work for them and to represent that division that I've always been watching, that it was such a great feeling, and it made me feel very accomplished that what I was trying to do with developing myself as a wrestler, I accomplished it.
Okay, so you get the call, you're part of the X Division, you're wrestling. So now comes the frustrating part. You weren't really featured that much. You didn't wrestle as much on the shows. How frustrating was it to be part of one of the biggest companies for wrestling but barely featured?
It was extremely frustrating because, you know, as a wrestler, you think this is it. And now you're going to start kind of blowing up and doing shows all over, but the only, like I said, like you were saying, the frustrating thing is they just, you know, TNA was having a lot of difficulties, a lot of power struggles, a lot of things going on, so ideas would go up, and then they would get thrown out, and all this stuff. So they had, initially when I was signed, they were going to have a big surge of the X Division again, And then all of a sudden they decided to take that away. Well, now they have all these guys they signed, but not enough time on TV because they don't want to push the X Division anymore. And unfortunately, I got the bad end of that, and I would just constantly be sitting at home waiting for, you know, my next TV booking or whatever, and it just would never come through. You know, a lot of unanswered emails, unanswered phone calls and everything, so that was really the most frustrating part, was the lack of communication, where they really weren't telling me what was going on. I had to try to find out for myself, and you know, I just really wanted to get out there, be on TV, and just make a name for myself.
All right, so you got the call. You're happy. You're signed. You're not used. And then you end up leaving. Do you ever foresee yourself going back to TNA?
If it came up, yeah. I mean, you know, but I never leave anything set in stone or whatever. You know, I leave all options open. So if it worked out, obviously I'll be a lot smarter. So I'd make sure that, you know, whatever my deal was, I'd make sure I would be used.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, because I want it to be, if I'm a failure, I want it to be my fault, not because of some crappy system.
Okay.
So, you know, I want it to be because maybe I didn't live up to expectations or something. But to be never used, you know, it's not really my fault that I wasn't a success with the company. They never really gave me a shot. So I would really need to be told and confirmed that I would be given a shot. And that's kind of how I'd see myself at least going back there. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it with that.
All right. So getting away from TNA, because obviously you've been quite frustrated with it. You talked about being an ECW fan growing up, but how did you, what made you a fan of wrestling?
Well, making me a fan of wrestling, that was actually before ECW, obviously. I honestly can't even remember how I became a fan of wrestling. I just have been watching wrestling since before I can remember. Just always getting the WWF pay-per-views and, you know, Monday Night Raw, watching that and everything. And when ECW came around, is when I became a hardcore fan, and, you know, I followed it, got all the tapes I could get and everything, just became really big into it. And that's what kind of opened the door into learning about independent wrestling and going to independent wrestling shows, and then all of a sudden, like, it just opened the floodgates for me. And that's how I learned that there was a wrestling school, and then ever since I found out there was a school, you know, I forget, I was probably like 15 or so. I said, you know, you had to be 18 to join. It was always just from 15 on, I said, when I'm 18, I'm joining. And, you know, I did it.
So even though you don't particularly remember what got you as a fan, is there any particular wrestler that you model yourself after? Because personally, I watch a lot of your matches, a lot of your career. But one person I see the biggest resemblance between you is Dean Malenko. Is that somebody that you would pattern yourself after?
I don't specifically. I like to take different things from everybody. Dean Malenko was definitely an influence where I would watch a lot of his tapes. I'd watch a lot of him, Rey Mysterio, all different guys. Probably my favorite guys that I always wanted to kind of map myself, not even just wrestling wise but career wise, was Chris Jericho. You know, he's a guy that I just always loved. Every time he got in the ring, I loved everything he did. You know, and I don't want to go in there and just be another Chris Jericho where I'd copy all his stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a guy that I always would look up to and want to follow. But at the same time, I would take kind of flavors of all different aspects, all different wrestlers. So, I mean, it's definitely an honor to be told about any of those wrestlers if I make someone think of them. And Dean Malenko is obviously one of the best technical wrestlers and everything.
Yeah.
But I definitely do technical, but then I also throw in some of the flying. I throw in this here and there. So I try to create my own style. But none of it's really original, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
I'd say it's bits and pieces of all different people.
So would you say you, in a way, pat yourself after Jericho, because Jericho is notorious because he said he learned a lot of things from different places. He went to Japan to learn how to do high flying. He went to Smoky Mountain to learn how to do a promo and these things. So that is that a way you pat yourself after somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. His career path is one of my favorites because of what he did. You know, he was, you know, did independence. You know, independent wrestling wasn't huge then. It was still a little more territory, but he, you know, that was considered the independence. He was doing that, and then he did Mexico, and then he did Japan, and then he, you know, then he went to ECW, and then he made his way into the big time. So yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you know, that's why I always wanted to travel. Like, I wanted to go to Japan because I wanted to experience that. I wanted to be able to wrestle like them and be able to hang with them. You know, another goal of mine is to be able to go to Europe and do a tour in Europe and hang with those guys. So, definitely, yeah, you know, to answer your question in one word, that would be yes.
All right. Having been a wrestler for going on nine years now, what's the one thing that you look back on and you think, wow, I never thought I'd ever get a chance to do that?
Oh, man, there's so many things I've done that I'm extremely proud of. You know, one, wrestling on TV, two, getting flown to another country and doing a tour there. You know, three, there's a lot of names that I would never even think that I'd be in the same locker room, let alone wrestling in the ring with. You know, I've wrestled Goldust, I've wrestled Vader, I've wrestled Matt Hardy, I've wrestled the Great Muta, which is amazing. I've wrestled Liger, another amazing one. Like, there's a lot of people that you're just like, wow, I used to watch this guy,
yeah.
You know, all the time. I actually got some really cool stories in my time in TNA. My first match I ever had with them, this was actually before I was signed, I did a triple threat with Jesse Sorensen and Jack Evans. And first person after the match I saw walking through the curtains to the back was actually Sting.
Wow.
With a huge smile on his face, and he actually gave me a huge hug and said, you know, that's what wrestling's all about. And he was real excited and everything. You know, the guy doesn't know me for anything, has no reason to ever even talk to me. And to, like, that's like one of the coolest experiences. And then another great experience is sharing a locker room with like Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. And you know, Ric Flair was actually I was at TNA during like the holiday season, and we actually had a big TNA holiday party. So you know, here I am at a bar hanging out with like Ric Flair, drinking wine and stuff. Like, that's something you never thought would have ever happened.
Yeah.
So you know, those are some experiences that like I can never take back. I mean, you can never take away from me. And you know, if you look at the amount of wrestlers out there and the percentage of success, you know, I've done a lot to be very proud of.
You, definitely. You just mentioned the triple threat you had with Jack Evans and Jesse Sorensen. How bad did that 630 moonsault hurt? Because I saw him flying off, and I could just imagine you on the canvas praying.
Yeah, that 630, no matter who does it, is extremely painful. You know, Ricochet does it as well. And,
yeah.
That one's... Because they really have no control. They're just flying and winging themselves as hard as they can, and they're coming down full body weight on you. So, I mean, you're obviously ready for it. But
you're naturally ready for it.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah, it is painful. It's probably one of the worst things I've taken off the top from someone. But to be honest... Like, one on a smaller show that I've taken from Ricochet hurt a lot more than that one from Jack Evans. Probably because I don't remember so much because of adrenaline rush and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that was my pretty much like a TV debut for me and everything. So, I wouldn't be able to, like, tell you that I exactly remember the pain. I just remember that I was like, oh, shit, when it first happened. But then after that, it, like, didn't matter.
All right. So now that you're not with TNA anymore and you're doing a lot of independence, what is your ultimate goal at the end of the day? You're the F5-0 Wrestling Champion right now. You have a big title defense tonight against Talon. But what do you see yourself ultimately hoping to accomplish as your career is starting to take off and blossom, but when you reach the end of it?
I just hope that... I can just continue to do what I love, and I just always want to end the show with the fans talking about me. You know, I always take pride in being, you know, the top match of the night or whatever it is. So, really, I just want to, when I walk away from wrestling, I want people to just say, like, man, that guy was really awesome. And, you know, even if I don't go any further with my career, you know, at least people, and I already kind of hear people or see people online talking about how, you know, TNA dropped the ball with me and stuff like that, or, you know. That feels good, you know, because that means people really appreciated what I offered at shows and everything. I don't walk into any independent show like, oh, I've done TNA, I don't need to, you know, do much tonight or whatever. Yeah. I go into every show just trying to tear the house down. As long as I can keep doing that for a decent amount of time and the fans are always talking about me and having a good time and happy that they spent their money on the show, then, you know, I'll be happy with my career.
All right, and my final question for you is, what do you think is the biggest thing you need to improve on as a performer to truly make it as a top star, like in WWE or TNA? What, the biggest improvement to your overall character?
I'd say my biggest improvement would be, like, mic work and stuff like that, and kind of just, yeah, because I was never really a talker. You know, when I got into wrestling, I was always a huge fan of the wrestling.
Yeah.
Not so much the talking. But believe it or not, it's an entertainment industry, and it's one of the biggest things. So it definitely could have, you know, if you look at anyone's career, I mean, there's so many amazing wrestlers out there. But it really comes down to who can really connect on the microphone to the fans. So that's really, if I were to say what every wrestler in all of wrestling should say their biggest improvement, even the best person on the mic, they should always want to be even better on the mic. The mic is the most important thing in professional wrestling, as we see on TV, where, you know, it's 90% of the show is on the mic.
Definitely.
So I would say that that's something I would always definitely need to improve. You know, my wrestling, you know, I feel speaks for itself, but, you know, I can always do better on the microphone.